Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to The Drop. My name is RJ. I'm guest hosting this week. We have four episodes we're going to bring you from this live event that we did this past weekend in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philly. It was so much fun. We got such great feedback, and we just had to share it with you all. So this is going to be part one. You're going to hear a song from our house band, Feel Free. And then after that, you're going to hear Anthony Crizon, who played with the Spin Doctors, Noel Redding, and a bunch of others. He's going to talk to his friend and bandmate, Tom Marshall. They played in Amphibian together. And then you're going to hear Anthony play a couple songs with our band, Feel Free. So this was a really fun event. Each of the four musicians that we talked to got to do a little interview and then play some songs. So today you're going to hear Anthony Crizon's interview and songs. On the next episode, you're going to hear Charlie Hall from the War on Drugs. Matt and I got to talk to him, and then he played a couple songs with Feel Free. So that's what you're going to hear next. But right now, we're going to just get you into this conversation with Tom and Anthony right after you hear a song from Feel Free. Enjoy it. We'll see you back here for part two.
All right. This one's called What a Time. Thank you. This time it won't box us in. I won't lose out on time, my friend. Time, this time it won't box us in. I won't lose out on time, my friend. No, I won't. But as these years go by, each will feel shorter. You like it or not, we're getting older. But our souls just might be getting bolder. The only ones in this life are all you young enough to strive. Take it there first. Are you full of energy? You can lose yourself to passion. You can almost feel free. This time it won't box me. I won't lose out on time, my friend. Oh, time, this time it won't box us in. I won't lose out on time, my friend. No, I won't. No, I won't.
Thank you, guys. Look at all these beautiful masked faces up here. Hey, guys. How are we all doing today?
That's you. That's you. I'll stand over here.
Just going to knock some stuff over real quick on our way up. Hey, thank you guys so much for coming. My name's RJ. This is my friend Tom Marshall. This is my other friend Matt Dwyer. You'll be hearing from us a lot today. Thank you guys so much. This is amazing. Over the last couple weeks, people have asked me what this event is, and I don't really know, but we are going to find out together because we are pioneering this live music and interview experience, and we're super excited. And it actually started with the conversation with Andrew, who plays in Feel Free. And we talked about doing something together, and I reached out to my friend Mark Brownstein and Aaron Magner and was like, hey, do you guys want to do this thing that we've never done before, but we think it's going to be awesome? And they were like, sweet, sign me up. So, you know, several months later, here we are.
How can you say no to that?
Exactly. So we know we have the right crowd here. So we all work for Osiris Media. It's a company that Tom and I founded, I guess, almost 4 years ago now, which is crazy. We make music podcasts. And we also do events. So OsirisPod.com is where you can find everything Osiris related. I do want to just say thanks to the band, Feel Free. Kevin, Garrett, Evan, and Andrew. They're amazing. They have the hardest job because they took on the task of not just playing music for you all, but also learning a bunch of songs to play with all of our guests. So they've been working their asses off for a couple weeks. So make sure when they come back up here, you guys, you know, give them more applause. We have some amazing musicians who are going to join us. We have Mark Brownstein of the Disco Biscuits, Aaron Magner of the Disco Biscuits, Charlie Hall from the War on Drugs, and Anthony Crizon of the Spin Doctors and lots of other bands. And we're just super excited to be here and to do this, and thank you all for coming.
Yeah, we need to thank the folks here at Ardmore Music Hall for hosting us. Please, please. And Jesse and Pat and Joe and everybody helping us out today. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. You are so wonderful. We need to give it up for our sponsor, our beer sponsor today, Fiddlehead Brewing from Vermont. These guys are awesome, just south of Burlington, Vermont. Brad and Eric are out here today. They brought lots of Fiddlehead beer, so drink the Fiddlehead beer. We are drinking the Fiddlehead beer, and we thank Fiddlehead. And we're going to hear more about Fiddlehead a little bit later in the show. And we need to thank you, right? I mean, you guys came out on a Sunday afternoon to see some music. I know that it was easy because the birds have the bye week, so it's okay. But a lot of you were also friends and family and supporters of Osiris for a really long time, and the only reason why we are up here on stage is because of the support that you guys have given us in the last 4 years. So thank you so much. Tom?
So they, after that eloquence, it's hard to follow these guys because they gave me the easy job, though. So the job is to describe what the rest of the evening is going to entail. And that is basically one or more of the Osiris people you see here are going to get to interview and talk to for about 10 to 15 minutes. And we're going to set our watches to make sure it doesn't go over. Each of these fine four musicians individually, and then we're going to set them loose to play with the house band two songs of their choosing. And then after those four occur, they are all going to gather here for a super duper jam. Right? Super jam?
Super duper jam.
Just a duper jam, I'm told. So, I think that's really it. I'm the first one on the docket. I'm interviewing a musician I'll bring up in a second, but I think we can say goodbye to RJ and Matt at the moment.
For now.
Yes.
For now. Thank you guys again.
We'll be back.
See y'all soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage my friend and New Jersey's incredible musician. You see him at Asbury Park, you see him Central New Jersey, Northern New Jersey, all around. One of the best guitarists, Anthony Crizon.
Thank you, Tom Marshall. It's good to be here.
Thanks, Ant. So you guys might have seen in the promo, let me sit down like a normal human. You may have seen from the promo information that Anthony's associated with the Spin Doctors, but he's, and we're going to get into that because there's some good stories there. But he's so much more than that. Anthony is a producer and runs one of the most successful recording studios in New Jersey. It's right across the river in Raritan called Sonic Boom Studios. He's produced and written and played on hundreds of songs with hundreds of amazing musicians. He's a great singer and a great guitarist, but he's also an amazing bass player and drummer and songwriter. So my personal connection with Anthony is that I got incredibly lucky when I needed a guitarist for my band Amphibian. This would be around 2001, and I'd written a bunch of songs for my next album, and then my band completely dissolved. And our drummer somehow got the demos in front of Anthony, and to my amazement, we looked up Anthony. I was like, oh my God, he's not even going to return the call, kind of thing. And he loved the music, right?
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's Tom Marshall. Who wouldn't want to be involved with, you know, one of the best lyricists that I know? You know.
So we started recording and playing together, and before long, we were Amphibian, and we still are Amphibian, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So, Anthony, how did you get started?
Well, I started on the drums. I've been doing gigs since I was 11 years old. I was in a band with my brother, Michael, who's a great blues player. And he was into, like, Johnny Winter and a bunch of stuff. So I was playing drums for that. And then my cousin, Archie, had like a Ryder truck and a bunch of gear. We were doing like high school dances. So I've been gigging since I was like 11 or 12. I would play drums and sing. We'd do covers like Creedence, The Stones, Zeppelin. So that was the start for me, you know. And then I grabbed the guitar probably around 13, 14, started writing songs in high school and got into a band. And we were doing like high school dances, playing our own stuff, you know, selling out churches. And then me and the guy that I started the band with, we got a record deal. First, I got a publishing deal. Got signed to Sony as a songwriter. I was writing songs, and I got some cuts. And we hooked up with a manager named Alan Kovac from L.A., and he got us a deal on Chrysalis. So we made a record on Chrysalis. So it was kind of like just started rolling since I was a teenager, you know.
That's amazing. So right out of high school, you got a record deal?
Yeah, pretty much. I was kind of like, a lot of my friends were going off to Berkeley, and my parents split up when I was like 13, and they didn't have much money for me to go to music school. It wasn't even an option. So I was kind of jealous that they were going to music school, but I worked hard. I had a good work ethic. I was doing a lot of shows in New York City, wherever I can, always original music writing. I hooked up with a studio, Waterfront Studios in Hoboken, which Henry Hirsch is the guy that did all the Lenny Kravitz records and was a brilliant producer. So he was doing all the Sony publishing demos, and we started getting a lot of action from that. And
I know you. You're like you're one of these guys who just is writing all the time. Like, you don't stop. You've never stopped writing. Once you realize you could write, and I have another guitarist friend that's very much like that. Writes all songs all day, every day. And maybe you could name a couple of the people you've written songs with and for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those guys, like I said, like every morning I pick up my guitar when I drink coffee and I come up with ideas. My iPhone's loaded with ideas, and I don't get to them all because I'm so busy in my own studio producing and working with new talent and doing artist development. After about 60 hours a week, I'm like, I don't want to work on my own thing. I'm just going to go home and spend some time. But so anyhow, I've written songs for, well, the Lenny Kravitz was one guy that I wrote a song. When I was in Hoboken working on songs for my own record that we had a deal on Chrysalis with, I became friends with Lenny Kravitz, and he was in the studio working on the Mama Said record, and at the time he was having some problems with Lisa Bonet, and he heard this track I wrote called Stand By My Woman, and Lenny called me up the next day, and he's like, you know, I'm really feeling this tune, can I write to it? And I said, sure, you know. And then that was one big song for me. You know?
But that's good. That's good mailbox money, right?
Yeah, yeah. Lenny's. You know, back then you just never know who somebody's going to become. But Lenny's like a legend now, and I do my own version of that song too. But like the record is amazing. I mean, you know, I play drums on the original version, and then you know, it's funny. The second verse is a short verse because we ran out of tape when we were cutting the demo. We never realized it was going to be a classic record, you know. But yeah, we had to cut the verse. Henry's like, man, we're at the end of the reel. We're going to have to cut it short. So we made the second verse as short.
That's like the end of Beatles, I Want You, She's So Heavy. The tape runs out.
Yeah, well, we ran out of tape, so that's why the second verse is short, you know. But
that's cool. So what was he like? Did you tour with him or you just wrote with him?
No, I mean, Lenny wanted me to play drums with him, believe it or not. But I had my own record deal at the time on Chrysalis, you know.
Oh, okay.
And so we were doing a record. Man, in hindsight, I kind of sometimes wish I went and did some stuff with Lenny, but you know.
Your website mentions Mick Taylor, whom I should know that name. And once I read this book about the Exile on Main Street, the Rolling Stones, the making of one of my favorite albums, I kind of hadn't heard his name. And in that movie, in that book, it kind of occurred to me that he wasn't quite sure whether he was in the band or out of the band. He didn't get treated very well by the Rolling Stones, it didn't seem, at least at that stage. Did you tour with Mick? Did you write with Mick?
No, we did some writing, and I met him because when I had the record deal on Chrysalis, I was going back and forth. Our management was in L.A., and when I was in L.A., I hooked up with this bass player named Greg Sutton, and he played with Dylan in 81, and while he was in Dylan's band, Mick Taylor was in the band too, you know. And me and Greg hit it off really well, so he said, man, you know, he came to Jersey to work with us, and Mick was living in New York at the time, so he said, let me see if Mick will come out, you know, we'll just give him some money and whatever else we had to buy from. But so Mick came out, and we wrote a few tracks, and like at the time I had a 16-track one-inch tape machine, and we wrote this song. We wrote a few songs together, but we had this song called Gospel Agreed that reminds me of Gimme Shelter, kind of. And every take Mick did, I only had like one track for him. He's like, let me take it again. I'm like, I didn't want to erase it. I'm like, man, it's a fucking great solo, you know. But anyhow, so that's how I met him. We hung out. We wrote two songs, and we jammed till like 4 in the morning, you know. And I don't know why Mick was the best musician the Stones ever had. I mean, Jagger said it a few times. He really was, you know. But I think he might have wrote, like, Can't You Hear Me Knocking in some of the songs and didn't get credit for it. And he also had a cocaine problem, you know, which I know that some of the Stones all had drug problems. But I mean, I don't know what happened, but Mick was a great player, man.
At that phase, there were a lot of them had problems at that moment. Yeah. Yeah. Now, one of the bands that was, when you were on your way up, to me, I think, was when you were playing with Noel Redding, the bass player, of course, for the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Did it blow your mind that you were playing with Jimmy's bass player?
Yeah, you know, that the first gig I did with Noel, my friend Frankie LaRocca met him at the Grammys, and he you know, we all love Hendrix and stuff, and he was like, just talk to Noel about, hey, you want to do a gig together? So the first gig we did together, it was me on guitar, Earl Slick from Bowie's band. Earl Slick was on guitar, me, Jack Daly on bass from Lenny Kravitz's band, and we did this show in Staten Island at the Wave, and it was like all of us, you know. And it was amazing, you know. And then, so then after that, me and Frankie became friends with Noel, and we started doing, you know, Noel died kind of broke. He sold his publishing. I don't know if you read his book, but the list, you know, he's kind of died broke. But so me and Frankie LaRocca were doing shows. We were bringing Noel out every 6 weeks and doing like the States. We were playing like all the tri-state area. We even did a live record in Prague with Ivan Kraul. And I played with Noel on and off for about 10 years. And yeah, God rest his soul, man. But he was a good friend of mine, you know.
That's great. My only brush with Noel was at the Wetlands when Fish was playing, and they did one of their Fish likes doing jokes on the audience, and a pretty funny one was they were starting the song Fire. Let me stand next to your fire, and they pretended that Mike, the bass player, couldn't get the beginning right. It was kind of like it started like...
Oh, it's like... bam, bam.
Yeah, and Mike would come in early or late or whatever, and Trey like stopped the song, and he looked at Mike like, come on, dude. And he did it again. They started again, and Mike again fucked up. And so finally Trey is kind of like, is there anyone here that can play bass on this song? And of course Noel Redding walked out from the wings. But what is not known, everyone was clapping, so they didn't see this part. I was sort of side stage, and Noel picked up Mike's guitar. I think Mike went on to play like cymbal on Fish's drum set. But Mike gave Noel his bass, which is a 5-string. And I saw this look of panic on Noel Redding's face. He looked down and he looked at me, I think thinking like I was a roadie because I was side stage. And it was like kind of like, can you get me a new bass?
Do you have a 4-string? Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, I just write the lyrics.
Yeah.
but he managed to play it fine. Is that a thing, like not being able to play a 5-string?
Yeah, I mean, it took me a while to get used to it, but a 5-string is really useful to just, you know, with that low note, because the 5th string is tuned down to B, I believe, you know, so it's like... But when all the gigs we did with Noel, he would come over and he would always use my jazz bass. I got a 71 jazz bass, and he would always use my Fender bass, which was a 4-string. You know?
Well, a true legend, Noel. That's cool. Now, skipping a little bit forward to the Spin Doctors, and I'll give you my short background of knowledge. In the early 90s, there was this moment where the three big new jam bands on the scene were Spin Doctors, Blues Traveler, and Fish. And strangely, they were all from my hometown, Princeton, New Jersey.
Yeah.
So John Popper and Chris Barron were at the Princeton High School, and I was with Trey over across town at Princeton Day School. And it's just sort of a coincidence, possibly, but they all wound up on the Horde tour together in 1991. And then, of course, what happened with Spin Doctors and also Blues Traveler just had this incredible, successful string of radio hits. They went like this, and Fish kind of say like that. Nothing to do with the songwriting, of course. And it changed everything. And you know, the multi-platinum album was called...
A Pocket Full of Kryptonite.
Yeah, Pocket Full of Kryptonite. And their career rocketed. And at their peak, at least that's how it appeared sort of from the outside, they all of a sudden replaced their guitarist. Their guitarist was Eric Shankman, and they replaced him with Anthony Crizon. So you were just dropped in you know, to the top of like one of the most famous bands at the time. Was it like private jets, 5-star hotels, European gigs?
It was a lot of fancy hotels and a lot of good stuff. I mean, we were headlining, you know, doing big shows like the Garden State Arts Center, 15,000 people. And opening for the Rolling Stones was a big highlight for me, and opening for the Allman Brothers at Red Rocks and stuff, you know. But it's funny how that gig came about, because the Spins were going through turmoil with the guitar player, you know. And they had to replace him. They had a week off. And actually, at the gig I did at the Wetlands, I was playing with Noel Redding. And it was Wasabi. It was Eric, the guitarist from the Spin Doctors, Chris, Aaron, and John Popper.
Oh, Chris Barron and Popper had their own band.
That was Wasabi at Wetlands. The place was jam-packed, but we were opening for them. It was me and Noel Redding and Frank LaRocca. And they were all on the side of the stage, and that gig was the one that, you know, they all saw, and even Eric, the guitar player, like Frankie told me, they all liked my playing, you know. So that was the gig that got me an audition to go to L.A., you know.
Who'd you audition against, just wondering?
Oh, yeah, it was Kenny from Edie Brickell's band, Alex Skolnick, who's phenomenal, you know. And,
Yeah,
they're all great guitarists. I mean,
Alex Skolnick is a Osiris podcaster.
Yeah, no, he's an amazing guitar player, that guy, you know.
Yeah, great guitarist. He's more like hard rock.
Yeah, he's a shredder. He's amazing, you know.
Yeah. Let's talk a tiny bit about songwriting. Your guitar playing defines you, because that's what people see, but I think you're more defined, not because I know you, by your writing. Working in your studio, some of your clients, and I know this from personal experience, show up with the tiniest little song idea, and whether it's a lyric or a riff, and then before they leave your studio, it's a song, usually with you playing all the instruments. So tell a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been doing that for years. I mean, as a songwriter, I play like guitar, bass, drums. I'm pretty diverse musically, like where I just don't play one style of music. I listen to a lot of music, and owning a studio for 25 years, it keeps you, you know, I have girls that are 14 coming in with songs that are, they're influenced by artists that I don't know, and they'll play me these songs as a reference, and I learn a lot off of these projects, you know, because, you know, it makes you have to listen to how these other records are produced that are new or retro, whatever they're listening to. And usually if somebody shows up, I'll know what's not right or what's wrong about it, and I'll always give them options, and I'll map it out and do a rough sketch of the song. If they like it, I'll either track it up myself, or if I need to farm it out, I'll do it. But that's been a main source of my income for years, you know, and I take pride in, like, artist development, working with new artists, and, you know, whether they're big or not, just to, you know, kids or, you know, everybody's, you know, we learn off each other too, you know.
Knowing you, I know that you and I are both like, we have a Beatles foundation, but it's always sort of a shock to me when I see you writing a pop song or like a good pop song or like country. You go to Nashville and write songs.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you switch genres? Is that like your job, or is that just like you force yourself to do it, or you just can do it?
I enjoy the process of, like, you know, one of the trips I went up, one of the songs I'm going to play, I wrote on a, sometimes you go to Nashville and a lot of these writers that are signed to publishers, they have to write two songs a day. They have a 2 o'clock and a 4 o'clock. So I would get in a room with people that have written hits, and I really don't, I'm not a fan of trying to write for a pitch list where they say we need to write a song for Kelly Clarkson like this. I'd rather just write something that feels good, you know, and always have the most success of trying to keep it real as a songwriter. And I've gotten cuts off of songs like that more than I did trying to chase the tail of a sound that's going on, you know. So, but...
Got it. Yeah. Most people, when they finish their job, you know, they go home and then they do what they want to do, but you just continue writing and playing music. How do you know when you're writing for yourself? Like, what's your style?
I don't know. I mean, if I'm working with an artist that's, like, signed to a label and I know what their music's like, I'm going to listen to all their hits and, like, you know, just try and get something in the vein of what they have. And then if they're a good writer too, you get together and you'll kind of shape and mold that into their sound. It's always good to have the artist involved when you're co-writing, trying to get on a record if you can, because, you know, most people don't like outside songs. It's hard to get behind somebody's lyric, you know what I mean, if you're not the one writing it, you know. But talking about lyrics, Tom, man, you, me and you have written a lot of great stuff together. I've never worked with a guy that shows up with a full lyric that's like a piece of poetry, you know.
Like a complete poem.
Yeah, so you show up, and which is a different experience, which is great. I mean, it's like a blank canvas of what can we do with this, or, you know, I'll play his stuff till, I mean, how do you write it? You and Trey, I mean, what's different from how you and I and you and Trey write? Is it this?
Not a lot. I mean, since you and I live so close together, sometimes if I come up with a good idea, I'll just go immediately to you to write that one song. Yeah. But for Trey, normally I have, like, because his schedule is, and he lives far away from me, we have to arrange to do a songwriting trip. So I'll, like, show up there prepared with, like, 20 songs. So, so like, when you and I work, I guess it's, like, from that one thing, that's my idea. And you always give me, like, Tom, what do you hear? How do you hear your words here? Where do you want the chorus? How are you feeling, kind of vibe? And working with you and working with Trey, I'm blessed because I've written with other, you know, incredible musicians and songwriters, but it never works this way where just somehow you guys feel my ideas in such a way that, like, we click right away.
Yeah, it's a good chemistry.
It's very natural, and I love that, how that works. But Trey and I, we definitely like to complete the entire song when we write. You and I, again, because we live near each other, we could work on a song for months and tune it and make it perfect. I mean, the song comes together in an hour or something.
Yeah, usually.
But then sometimes we'll add stuff, add other musicians and stuff.
Yeah.
Trey and I, because, like, we, you know, we go somewhere, like, I don't know, Maryland or whatever, and rent a house, we have just those 2 days. So we like to... I think there's a misconception that I give Trey the lyrics and then he takes it and Fish writes the song.
Yeah.
And it's not like that. It's Trey and I write the song and at least we get all the harmonies figured out.
And you guys stick to the rough demo type of version.
When we leave, because the sense that Trey and I have is that when we leave that room, that song now becomes a Fish song. So we at least like to have it complete, the idea complete.
Is there now, because I know having an amazing band like Fish, the chemistry of those guys on stage, I mean, it doesn't get better than that, you know. But when you and Trey walk in with a demo of what you guys did, does it take on a new life when the guys play, or do they stick to what you guys did sometimes, or does it turn into a whole new baby?
I know what you're talking about. Chasing the demo?
Demo-itis, yeah.
Demo-itis? Yeah. The thing is, like, when you're in, you know, like Anthony and I are in a room and we come up with a song, that song is like your creation, it's your baby, right? You don't want it to get infiltrated or played another way. And I have to sort of give up that that feeling sort of. But for me, when a song goes from an idea to having Fish play it, it's like so gratifying that I can get over that.
Let me ask you this. So say, like, because you show up with finished lyrics that are like a piece of poetry for me and probably Trey too. Does it change, like, when Trey sees it, does he go with the whole thing, or you guys change it, or does he ever grab parts of one song and use parts of another? Or?
Yeah, the most recent example of that is the song Leaves on Sigma Oasis, where Trey, basically, we kind of, it seemed, like, had the beginning of the song, and he was working from one of my songs, and then I guess there was this period where the chorus was going to come in and I thought we would have to write it. And he started singing another one of my songs that to me was a completely different idea, completely different concept. It's something I never would have done. That's like the magic of collaboration is, you know, being open to other ideas and not saying no. Like, I would have said no if I was just by myself. I would have said no, those are different things. And it sort of magically worked.
Yeah. Well, one thing people might not notice about you is my experience writing with you is you're great with melodies and phrasings, too. Like, a lot of the stuff we write, I mean, you come up with a lot of melodies, too. I don't know if you do that with Trey a lot, but your melodies are great, you know?
Yeah.
And your phrasings, you know, I can hear a lot. When I hear the stuff we write and I hear the Fish stuff, I'm like, man.
Yeah, like, sometimes it's all... Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it's you, you know, I just sit back and watch you or Trey work. Sometimes I have a firm idea, like, you know, it really should sound like this kind of thing. So for playing on stage, and I guess I'm talking about improvising... Do you feel like you're tapped into the same place that your songwriting creativity comes from? Because you're going to be jamming a little bit today, improvising, I hope.
I'm looking forward to playing with these guys. They're great. You
know? Yeah, that's something that I don't know much about, is like really improvising correctly. Like, I've watched Fish do it, and they're, like, to me, among the best.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you get four, especially people that haven't played together, on the same page? Like, what if you want to go one way and someone wants to go the other?
Yeah, that's tricky. I mean, I don't know. I'd say the whole thing is listening with big ears to see what's going on around you, especially when you got other guys doing stuff, because it could go anywhere. You know, everybody's following each other. And also, like, I like to lose myself in the music, you know. But it's good to have an idea on what you play on. Sometimes I'll channel a guitar player if the song's a certain way. I can think of Santana or Jeff Beck. But a lot of times the best stuff happens when I'm not... I'm not afraid to make a mistake to try and go somewhere to get somewhere cool, to do something great, you know what I mean? I think a lot of guitar players that aren't safe, like, you know, that do that, like, are my favorite players, Hendrix, Jeff Beck. I mean, they'll go for it, you know?
Make a mistake.
And sometimes make a mistake, but you'll find something brilliant around that. And, you know, we're a lot of musicians are their own worst critics, you know? So it's like, you think something sucked and you had a bad night, and we're humans. I mean, we can have a bad night going through a lot of stuff. And when you get on stage, sometimes that could sidetrack your mind. Other times you lose yourself and you play the best stuff you ever played, you know? But I think the best stuff happens when you lose yourself. But there's a good thing about chemistry, but having open ears and communicating and having good language with the musicians you're playing with, you know?
Well, let's hope you lose yourself tonight. I think we're going to bring Feel Free back up here. And Anthony, tell us a little bit about the two songs you chose to play with Feel Free.
Oh, yeah. The first song is a song called Dust and Bone. It's a title track to my CD. I got CDs for sale if you want. But it's a song that I wrote with some guys in Nashville. It's just about, you know, the chorus is like, you can't take it with you when you go, just to live it up while you can, especially the few years we had, you know. I lost a few dear friends in my life to cancer, and with COVID, I mean, this song is, it's got a lot of attitude about that message, you know. But this song was cut by Gretchen Wilson, Pat Travers, and a guy named Tim Hicks on Universal. And Steven Tyler actually had this track on hold and asked me for the session file. So it's funny, you write a song in 10 minutes, you know, and you put it out there, and you never know what's going to happen to it, whether it ends up on doing well on your own thing, Spotify, or it's a commercial, or other artists cut it, and you make some publishing money. So that's what we're going to play this one first, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Anthony.
We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Just throw me a line, 'cause baby, I'm running out of time. But my head is on the water and my heart is in your hand. Baptized by the devil, waiting on the hands of hell. You used to give. Well, my head is
you so much.
All right, thanks for listening to part one of this event. It was called End Afternoon with Osiris. Matt, Tom, and I had such a blast putting this together with our house band Feel Free and all these artists. And next, you're going to hear Charlie Hall from The War on Drugs talking with me and Matt and then playing a couple songs with Feel Free. So tune in for that. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.